All right, it's Dave Blair back with you here on 720 WGN. Mike Rowe has done a lot of amazing work over the years, showcasing how many people work at jobs which are essential to many of our lives, many without us even knowing it. The host of Dirty Jobs, Facebook series Returning the Favor, and the voice of Deadliest Catch always has the pulse on the American job market, and he always puts his money where his mouth is. Mike, how are you, pal?
Well, I'd say living the dream, except the dream has become kind of a fever dream, and we're all making it up as we go. We are all, if you'll pardon the metaphor, the nautical metaphor, which I used shamelessly on After the Catch last week, we are all, for the first time, I think, truly in the same boat.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's one day at a time. Like, you can't plan Monday right now, because you're not quite sure exactly how this thing's going to go.
Right, because it's a big boat with many compartments, and the information and the data that we are surrounded with and by doesn't really seem to have any context or perspective. And so emotionally, and I'm just speaking for myself and what I've seen, but it's like the country's going through the Kubler-Ross five stages of grief.
Yeah.
But we're all doing it at different times.
Yeah.
And so,
wow. Yeah.
Depending on the most recent press conference or the most recent headlines or whatever it is, wherever it is you are in the etymology of understanding this thing, you're either in denial, you're depressed, you're angry, you're bargaining, or you've accepted.
Or you're drinking.
Or all of it. You know?
No, you're totally right.
All of it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a fascinating thing to watch and experience. All at the same time.
Well, and you know, you're looking at different parts of the country opening up, right as you said, at different times. You know, Wisconsin just said, okay, we're not opening up till after Memorial Day. I'm thinking, oh man. I mean, you know, just what it's going to do to this economy is just not something I think anyone is even really thinking about at this point. And I think the one of the good things that is going to come out of this is suddenly people who never thought of themselves as essential, and I'm quoting you on this, are critical during this time.
It's an ironic point for me to make, because when times are flush, my stock in trade is typically to introduce you to people you've never heard of in towns you can't find on a map, doing something that somehow makes your life better. That's what Dirty Jobs was. That's what Somebody's Got to Do It was. That's what Returning the Favor is. But right now, I find myself... You know, when I look at the economy and see 22 million people out of work, well, the logic would say that those people have lost their jobs because the jobs are non-essential. But if you look at the whole, the smoking crater that their absence has created, then you realize, well, of course there's no such thing as a non-essential job. The whole thing is a mosaic. We're all held together with tile and grout, you know, and if you start pulling out the grout, the tile doesn't work. And so I think it is a wake up call. And it's one other truth that people are slowly getting their heads around at different rates. It's really interesting, Dave. I took a lot of heat a month ago when somebody asked me what I thought. And I told them the honest truth on Facebook about this Hobson's dilemma between overreacting and not taking it seriously, between shutting everything down and somehow overvaluing or devaluing life. You know, I mean, it's a prison of two ideas.
Right.
And I tried to articulate the fact that, look, we're going to have to figure out the cold calculus of the value of life. And nobody in politics wants to talk about that, because nobody's ever gotten elected by saying, hey, you know, 100,000 lives is not that big a deal. But we're all going to have to take the measure of that in the next month or so, I believe. And not to totally free associate, but it really hit me last week when Andrew Cuomo said, and I think I'm quoting him right, he said, there are no measures too drastic if one life can be saved. And I thought, what are you talking about? And it's such a nice thing to hear until you unpack it, at which point you're tempted to say, look, if no measure is too drastic or too draconian in order to save a single life, then why don't you reduce the speed limit to 20 miles an hour ask every motorist, force every motorist to wear a helmet, and outlaw left-hand turns. You would save 40,000 lives a year. So,
yeah,
I know it's a crappy thing to say, but I really believe in fits and starts. Everybody is stepping back and saying, okay, there is going to be a human cost. What can we accept and what can't we?
There's a lot of information out there about how many lives are lost from the common flu, somewhere between the CDC, somewhere between 25,000 and 60,000. And right, they talk about road deaths and drinking and alcoholism and what it does to society. And mm-hmm. I think you're right. People, as soon as somebody says anything like that on the air and social media, they are going to get taken down pretty quickly. And I think people are afraid to talk about it. But I think all of us to some degree, are thinking about that a little bit. Okay, we're going to shut down the economy for another, 4 to 6 weeks for the most part. And right, you were getting to the numbers or past the numbers of the Great Depression. And, where are we at with all this? But it's something that we're all thinking about. I think we're just not all talking about it because we're afraid of the consequences of getting that out there.
Right. It's hard to articulate it because what comes back over the net is, look, you can't compare COVID-19 to auto accidents. That's stupid, blah, 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 and here's why. You can't compare it to the flu. That's stupid. Here's why. But I never tried to compare the disease to another cause of death. What I'm trying to juxtapose is the bargain we make and the deal we make and our ability to live with the reality of, say, starvation. Yesterday, 24,000 people starved to death on the planet, and the day before, and tomorrow, another 24,000 will starve or die of a hunger-related disease. You can set your watch by it. 9.1 million a year. 10 million die of cancer around the world. 10 million,
yeah.
Right? These numbers are so big that we can't even really process them.
Right, right.
And so we simply live. I was reading one of Churchill's biographies the other day, and I was just so struck by 1939 in London when the bombs fell every day. The Germans just bombed the bejesus out of the city. And for the first 2 weeks, everyone stayed in their cellars and in the air raid shelters, and nobody came out. And 3 weeks in, people started to venture out. The bombs are still falling. Within a month, the shops are opening. The schools opened. The bombs were still falling. So I'm not saying that to say, hey, what we ought to do is hurry up and reopen. I'm saying it because there will come a point, and I want to say this right because people are going to hate me for it, but there will come a point when we will become bored with being scared. It happened after 9/11. It happens all of the time in history, and we never account for it. And it's not to be glib, and it's not to say that either side is doing anything wrong at the moment. I'm just suggesting that part of the calculus, part of this algorithm that's going to determine when and how we return to something resembling normalcy is going to have to do with boredom. It always does.
Or just the mere fact that we've got to get back to some normal. I mean, the anxiety, and I think just some of the almost PTSD issues that are going to come out of this, of the isolation and so forth, is going to be a bigger health crisis, I think, than the results of the coronavirus long term.
Look, yeah, I mean, it's beyond my pay grade, but poverty kills people, and depression and anxiety kill people. People die, for all kinds of reasons. Interestingly, we live with those deaths as well. I think one of the things that's most fascinating, I saw a governor on, I think it was Tucker Carlson a couple of weeks ago, who got lambasted for talking about and around this same issue. He basically said, look, don't shut the economy down because of me. I'm old. I'm a high risk. I'll be okay. I'll take care of myself. But basically, he had the temerity to suggest that something was more important than life. And we're at a time right now when a lot of people just can't hear that. They can't get their head around it. But Patrick Henry had some ideas about that, too, and lots of other people do as well. And that's why I think the conversation is worth having, not in an antagonistic way. But if you really distill it down to its bare essentials, what are we talking about?
Yeah,
we're talking about, is there anything more important than life? And it's interesting to see how that conversation unfolds, depending on who's in the mix.
We're talking to Mike Rowe, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN. Day player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Mike Rowe. Dirty Jobs, Returning the Favor, Deadliest Catch, America's Job Advocate. We were talking a little bit about business and some of these small business owners and the survival right now. One of the things I constantly think about through all this, Mike, is these businesses in your neighborhood. You know, I'm not talking about the big corporations, but the small businesses in your neighborhood, the mom and pops that support your community. You know, hey, we need a gift card for a fundraising event at the school, for our scouts, for our basketball team. You know, what can you give back? This is the time you give back in any way that you can. And if you can afford to do it, you know, buy some gift cards, do some catering out dinner one night, whatever it can be to help these people. Because I think you want them there when this is all over.
Well, it's only a matter of civilized life as we know it, you know. And isn't it interesting how when times are flush and when we can indulge ourselves in certain kinds of arguments, the lines typically get drawn between the employer and the employee, between management and labor, right? Mm-hmm. Those are how the sides get drawn up, and we tend to look at the business owner as rapacious. And we tend to look at the employee as someone who needs to be protected, and the conversation unfolds. Now, all of a sudden, to your point, people are saying, look, you've got to support your local small business. You've got to support the entrepreneur because, well, we rely upon them. And this always brings me back to an interesting point about Dirty Jobs that often went undiscussed. People looked at that show and optically concluded, logically, that it was a love letter to blue-collar work. Mm-hmm. In truth, and it was, but it was also a love letter to entrepreneurship. Most of the people we featured on that show had a stake in something. Some of them were flat-out small business owners. Many were managers. They were, you know, they got dirty. They had a skill, but they also had skin in the game, and they took risk. And somewhere in the reemergence of all of this, too, I hope we see a sort of a reversion to the respect that used to be given freelancers. You know, here in California, they've basically outlawed freelancing. They don't want people, you know, getting 1099s. The gig economy is seen as this horribly exploitive thing where people are being taken advantage of. In fact, in my view, the gig economy and freelancing, these are critical skill sets. You know, attitudinally, they're really important because they allow people to become more independent and eat what they kill. And I think maybe if this thing has silver linings, that might be one of them.
Well, I mean, it also gives companies flexibility to hire these people when they need to and when they can afford it, and then not have them around when you can't.
It's a question of dependence, not to get political about it, but everything gets politicized these days. But if you look at it in terms of, you know, on a micro level, how dependent do I want to be on my boss? On a macro level, how dependent do I want my country to be to China or to the Middle East or to, you know, whether it's energy or our pharmaceuticals or really anything? It's the matter of dependence and the issue of dependence, to go back to your question, is exactly what's at stake when you start to see your local businesses go out of business.
It's like
pulling on a thread of a sweater. You know, it bunches things up on the other end, and it's never good.
You know, I'm also in these unprecedented times also trying to throw some escape from some of this, especially on my show. And I want to take a little lighter side to the conversation. I love watching Returning the Favor. Always love Dirty Jobs. Your parents, your mother specifically, I always see her on your shows. I get such a kick out of them when they're on them. And your mom just wrote a book herself. First book at 80 years old.
Actually, it's her second.
It's her second?
She's 82.
Is it really? Oh, okay. I missed that. Okay.
My mother, well, she was 82 years ago. And we were having this existential conversation about the importance of hitting the reset button every now and again. And she's a terrific writer. She'd been writing me stories for years. I critique her stories. She critiques mine. So I just said, look, let's just do a book. And I went to a publisher, and the publisher said, if she writes a few dozen of her stories about you, so we have an angle, right, we'll make a deal. My mom goes away and writes 30 stories. I'm not in any of them. She calls the book About My Mother.
Yeah.
So the story's all about my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Great cover, too, by the way. Because it shows you that you're just sitting in the background, kind of like, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I'm just a guy in the background. Well, she did it again. This one's called About Your Father and Other Celebrities I Have Known. And it is 30-some stories about my dad, who's 87 years old. He lives with my mom still in a condo in Baltimore. And he is, I think, the most interesting man I've ever known. He's so unusual. He's so quirky, so hard-headed. He's having a hell of a time with the COVID thing because he volunteers at the hospital twice a week. And he delivers Meals on Wheels the other 2 days a week.
Wow.
So
what a good guy.
So he's driving. He's a terrific guy, but he's also a nightmare. And he's driving my mother crazy because the hearing aids are gone up and everybody's screaming at each other. And it's so funny and weird. And so she's written a book about it. And of course, it's a funny book and it hits the shelves at the height of the plague. So I've been busy trying to help.
Good, because you know what? We need a little of that right now. We need to laugh a little bit and escape a little bit in all this, right?
Well, look, like my pop used to say, if you're not laughing, the joke's on you. And, you know, finding humor in times like these, on the one hand, it's never been more important. On the other hand, it's hard to do. So, you know, people are turning to all kinds of things to find an escape.
Absolutely.
And you know, my bias aside, if I could get my mom's book into everybody's hands, I guarantee you people would feel better within 24 hours.
About My Father is the name of that book. And you're right. People are looking for some fresh content because they're going to run out of something soon. They're going to be watching their ninth round of Three's Company or something because they just are looking for something new. And you just had the 16th season of Deadliest Catch that just debuted. And you're also hosting a virtual talk show Before the Catch for the first time.
Yeah, it's strange. I've been on that show now 17 years, and it's a phenomenon, you know, and part of the reason I think is because we can't script the Bering Sea.
Right.
It's on all the time. And we used to do a show, a talk show in bars, after each episode called After the Catch, right? Sit down with the captains and tell fish stories and whatnot. We haven't done it about 6 or 7 years, but all things considered, I thought because we were all in the same boat, it would be good to do that. So we did an episode last week, literally from Zoom. You know, we just did it in our homes, had a great talk show with the captains, and that's going to come back. The network just ordered 6 of them. The crazy thing is, Dave, I'm shooting and delivering Returning the Favor from my office. I'm shooting and delivering After the Catch from my office. I'm trying to run a promotional campaign for my mom's book from my office.
Yeah.
And this month, we extended our work ethic scholarship program over at MicroWorks. I have $1 million. We're giving it away, like we do every year, for people who want to learn a skill and master a trade. So
that's awesome.
What's insane is that I think I'm busier than I've ever been.
That's what I think, too.
And
we're all working from home.
Trapped than I've ever been.
Yeah, because there's no end of the day. Almost anymore. I mean, you don't know when it starts and it ends. But I have to say this. You always put your money where your mouth is. You just talked about the scholarships that you're ready to give away through MicroWorks. You just donated 125 Chromebooks to a needy school. You donated a chunk of money to a New Jersey distillery to support their efforts to make hand sanitizers for people on the front lines. That's just a couple of the recent things you and your foundation have done, MicroWorks. You're such a good guy, and I really want to tell you, grateful for all that you do.
Look, you flatter me. You're welcome. I got good cards, and, you know, I played them later in life. You know, I didn't have a hit show until I was 43. But I knew what I was. I knew who I was by then. And I was so fortunate to get a show like Dirty Jobs on the air, which was really just a tribute to other people. And, you know, thank God it hit at the right time. And I've been doing the same show for 20 years, Dave. I just changed the title every 6 or 7 years.
Might be true, but I love every single one of them. I do. I love every single one. So you can catch Mike Rowe's COVID-19 edition of Returning the Favor on Facebook Watch. New episodes of Deadliest Catch can be seen Tuesdays at 9 Central, preceded by Before the Catch. Mike's mom's new book is called About Your Father, and you can get that at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold. And for more on Mike's foundation, you can visit MikeRoweWorks.org. I got it all. Got it all in there, man.
Dave, I'll tell you, man, I don't want to overstate it, but I think you have a future in this business.
I appreciate that, pal. Listen, be well, and again, really appreciate everything that you do.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. All right, it's 720 WGN.